Housing Economic Development Committee to order. We have some business to do today. I was just thinking, we don't have notes from the last meeting because it was not an, I don't believe it was an official meeting. It was a, or we took no action as a matter of fact. So unless I'm proven wrong by my trusty committee assistant, Michael, we do not have minutes, correct?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
So having said that, good morning to all and to our my semi-Zoom. I have been having nothing but problems with my computer, so why not expect this? So we'll continue on. We have the Department of Employment and Economic Development with us today. I'm hoping that they can give us a 15, 20 minute kind of walkthrough of what has been done, what we've done, what the feds have done for a loan program, excuse me, who has been served, who's not been served. And as we always say, it's always the feds' fault, so we'll just blame them for any mistakes. Is there someone from the department, and would you identify yourself?
Representative Mahoney, it's Kevin McKinnon, Deputy Commissioner of Economic Development.
Well, good morning, Kevin. Could you identify yourself for the tape and please proceed?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, my name is Kevin McKinnon, Deputy Commissioner for Economic Development at DEED. Pleasure to be here with you this morning to talk about, one, just an update on some of the federal programs and what might be in store for our businesses, and then give you an update on a couple of programs that we have as a result of previous legislative actions that will hopefully inform you of where we are at today and what the work of some of our lenders has been. So I'll start with the federal program. You know, when this all started, we worked very closely with the SBA to work on the declaration, the disaster declaration for the state. And as such, we're part of getting some of these federal resources here as quickly as we could. And then also helping to facilitate a lot of the trainings that the SBA has done. So as of now, there are three programs that I just want to touch on from the SBA. The first is the Paycheck Protection Program. This is a program in which businesses are eligible for up to $10 million of financing. As long as 75% of the funding is used for payroll, utilities, rent, those types of expenses, they are eligible to be forgiven over the next 8 weeks. And so in the first round of funding that we received, deployed, Minnesota, 46,000 Minnesota businesses took advantage of about $9 billion of the $350 billion that was allocated to the program. The average loan was about $200,000 per business. There's been some recent action in the Congress. Another $310 billion has been allocated to that program. We believe about, based on the uptake of the previous round, we believe about 35,000 businesses could take advantage of that, and about $8 billion. And so that's been a pretty successful program. Basically, about a third of all businesses with less than 500 employees in Minnesota got to take advantage of that. That was generally available through banks. Minnesota has 400 SBA certified lenders across the state, and so they work quickly to get those funds out. There are also several groups, nonprofits, that are also 7A lenders, who also had allocations, for that. In the second program that I'll touch on is the economic injury disaster loans. This is a program where up to $2 million is available for businesses. Basically, flexible financing. It does come with some interest, about 3.5% or 3.75%, but it's based over a term of 30 years. In the first round, there was about $5.5 billion assigned to that program. Minnesota had 300 businesses or so that took advantage of it, received about $66 million. The average loan for that program as well was about $200,000. In the second, in the proposal that's just passed Congress, there's an additional $50 billion that's assigned to this program. So based on the previous uptake, we estimate maybe about 3,000 businesses would be taking advantage of about $600 million here in Minnesota. That program is available directly through the SBA disaster team. And the third program that I touch on is the EIDL Advance. This is a program where you are ultimately applying for economic injury disaster loans, or EIDL. And you can request an advance of up to $10,000. It's really based on the number of employees that you have. In the first round, there was $3.2 billion in that program. About 10,000 businesses in Minnesota took advantage of that for about $46 million. The average loan was about, or the average advance was about $5,000. So in the second round, we would anticipate something like 30,000 Minnesota businesses would access about $150 million at that level, because there is $10 billion assigned to that program. Interestingly, out of the $310 billion that's assigned to the Paycheck Protection Program through the SBA, $30 billion of that is assigned for community lenders. These are some of the nonprofits that we have across the state. I know the Community Reinvestment Fund, I believe MEDA, and a few others are 7A lenders that would have access to that. Another $30 billion of that 310 is assigned to credit unions and smaller or mid-sized banks, which also could be helpful for rural areas. So that's a bit of the update on the federal programs that we've received here in Minnesota, and we're hopeful that those resources can go to work here in Minnesota as well when that ultimately gets deployed. The second program that I want to talk to you about is the Small Business Emergency Loan Program. This was a program that the legislature passed a few weeks back. It allocated $30 million to DEED. And basically, the money was to be used for businesses that were affected by Executive Orders 2004 and 2008. These are restaurants, other places of gathering, and just for your edification, we believe there's about 16,000 businesses that were affected by this order. And as likely no surprise to you, most of those businesses have laid off their staff. Food preparation and those in that category of layoffs is about 90,000 in our state, or about 20% of the total layoffs that we've had here in the state. And so at DEED, we needed to act quickly. We needed to get that money out as quickly as we could. And so what we did was we decided to use our emerging entrepreneur loan program lenders to help us get this money out. These lenders are geographic and culturally diverse here in Minnesota, and have really done great work for us in getting that money deployed, working in the communities that they are part of. And so to date, we are about to allocate all of the $30 million to our lenders across the state. As you know, these lenders have also received far more applications than they can actually fund with the money that we have. And so they have all ramped up quickly to be able to deal with the volume of applications, but then also the volume of loans that are to be deployed. Some organizations got out of the gate quickly and were able to deploy this money very quickly. Others took a little bit of time to ramp up and are now finding their stride, if you will, and processing pretty quickly now. So I know there's a few of them on here today, so I would like to personally thank them and thank all the others that have worked so hard for us to get this money out. They're doing great work in the communities, and we really appreciate it. So as of now, as of yesterday, actually, we've done about 560 loans. We've deployed about $17 million of that $30 million. Just from a geographic perspective, about 50% of those loans have gone to businesses in greater Minnesota and about 50% here in the Twin Cities. I also mentioned that we have a variety of ethnically based organizations who are our lenders in the Emerging Entrepreneur Program. They too have done great work. About 190 loans between those organizations, or about 33%. And most of those organizations work almost exclusively with ethnic groups that they serve. So just to give you a little sense of where the $30 million went, we have a variety of lenders that, as I mentioned, came out of the gate pretty quickly. The Metropolitan Economic Development Association, or MEDA, has received about $2.7 million as of today, and processed almost 75 loans. They are our top lender as of now. Others in that category, the Entrepreneur Fund up in Duluth, Central Minnesota Development Corporation, the Southwest Initiative Foundation. These organizations came out very quickly and have all done more than 50 loans each. Again, from a geographic perspective, we've got lenders in the North Central EDA, which is a Regional Development Commission, done about 30 loans up in Central Minnesota. NDC, obviously serving here in the metro, almost 40 loans. ADC, African Development Center, has done over 36 loans. And then other organizations like Greater Bemidji, the Northland Foundation, the Central Minnesota Initiative Foundation, MCCD, African Economic Development Solutions, Latino Economic Development Corporation, Women Venture, all are processing loans very, very, very quickly. And so, again, we appreciate their work. Some organizations, as I mentioned, have received upwards of $2 million, $2.5 million. There are other organizations with a little less capacity that have received anywhere from $350,000 to closer to $1 million. So as I mentioned, we've done about 560 loans, $17 million worth of financing that's already deployed. And very shortly here, our lenders will have all of the $30 million that was allocated to us. I'll be able to answer some questions if there are any here in a second on that program. The third program that we received was the Small Business Loan Guarantee Program. This was a $10 million appropriation that the legislature provided. And basically, it provides an 80% loan guarantee for private lenders. Essentially, we have enrolled about 70 lenders all across the state. These are banks, credit unions, nonprofits. And to date, we've done six loans for about $325,000 and guaranteed about $264,000 of these loans. Activity is starting to pick up a little bit. We've seen primarily a nonprofit do most of these. We had a bank complete one here recently. We are really encouraging our nonprofits to enroll so they can use their own and their other loan proceeds for this fund. We could guarantee some of their loan programs with this. And as you know, some of them have some fairly substantial loan programs at the local level. It's important to note that the lenders determine the terms on this program. Deed has really nothing to do with that. This is all determined by the lender. Most of our lenders are in Greater Minnesota. I think we only have 15 or 20 of the lenders that are based here in the Twin Cities. As I mentioned, things are starting to pick up a little bit, and we hope to see more nonprofits considering this. So the way that program works, basically, it's $100,000 if a bank or a nonprofit makes a $100,000 loan. It's paid back to the bank, and should that loan default, we would provide that lender with up to 80% of that loan, or $80,000, should that loan go bad. So to these two programs, we've tried to get these out obviously as quickly as we can. I'll just mention again, our lenders, and you'll hear from some of them here this morning, I think, have just done great work for us, and we appreciate all that they have done for us. So I'd be happy to answer any questions at this time, or just sit and listen.
Robbins has a question.
Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, members. Thank you, Mr. McKinnon, for being here and for all your hard work and your colleagues at DEED. Truly grateful for everything that you guys are doing and how quickly you stood up the unemployment part of that as well. Really great work by the DEED folks, so thank you. I do want to talk for just a quick minute. I had some questions about the emergency loan program DEED is running. A couple things. How was it determined how much each lender in the program was allocated, and what percent are the lenders getting for processing the loans, and what sort of reporting will be done? And then secondly, you also mentioned that 50% of the money that has been allocated of the $17 million so far has gone to Greater Minnesota and 15% to the Twin Cities, which I get and I appreciate, but as a suburban legislator, I would like a little more nuance on that. If you could maybe offline get to me how much of that is actually going to suburbs and exurban areas, because in talking to my constituents many, many times a day, very few have gotten this opportunity. And so I just like to further nuance how it's broken down in the metro area. Thank you.
Mr. McKim.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Robbins. So initially, we provided funding out to the lenders. Just about every, well, out of the 22 lenders that we do have, about 19 of them, I believe, received $1.1 million. And so that's basically $1 million for loans and $100,000 for administrative fees. So the lenders receive 10% of the loans for administrative purposes. Now, there's a couple of things to keep in mind with that. Number one, obviously, there's a lot of work that goes into this on behalf of the lenders to not only do the applications and take the and close the loans, but then obviously the monitoring and the work that they have to do primarily with a lot of their borrowers, with gathering the information. And then afterwards, all of these lenders are going to continue to service these loans. And so basically the way that it's set up is that in 2 years, if the businesses come back to substantially the same operations that they had prior to this, 50% of that loan can be forgiven. The remainder of those loans are amortized over another 3 years, so a five-year total loan. And so they're going to be servicing those loans and working with those borrowers as well as they come out of this. I'd also be happy to see what I can deliver as far as a suburbs or exurbs report. I do know that we will be reporting, I believe it's quarterly, and so at the end of June we'll have a more thorough report of the businesses and where a lot of that money went and to whom and locations. I do have, based as of last week, sort of a breakdown of which region in the state has received the loans, but I do not have that for the Twin Cities, if you will, for the suburbs and exurbs. But I can see what we can do on delivering that. Generally, at the end of the week, I get a report on what that looks like, and I'd be happy to share that with you, Mr. Chair, or the committee here today.
Great. Thank you so much. Thank you for all your work.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Robbins. And I'm sorry, I'm not sure if I answered every question. I may have missed one in there, but I think
we're good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Any other questions? I have one. Well, are there other members that have questions? Michael? Or Josh?
Mr. Chair, there are no other questions at the moment.
Rep. Zhang, I think.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I have a question. Yeah, I had a quick question to the Deputy Commissioner. A quick question. I received an email yesterday about the lenders, and there are four organizations that have not made loans. Leech Lake, Hmong American Partnership, Northwest Initiative Foundation, and Northside Economic Opportunity Network. Can you share with me why they have not been able to give out any loans, and have they have they shared up? Is it because of technical assistance that they need, or what is the reason why behind it?
Mr. McKinnon.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Zhang. Just a very quick update on that, and then I'll get to your question. Yes, there were four lenders that had yet to process loans. This week, however, Leech Lake Financial Services has submitted some loans, and we have approved them. Neon as well has begun to process their loans. In fact, Neon, as of today, this week, has submitted 11 that we've approved. And the Northwest Initiative Foundation has also started to process loans. The Hmong American Partnership, you are correct. We are waiting for some information from them. Generally, I would say that there's probably a couple reasons why. some of the lenders aren't necessarily experienced lenders in our emerging entrepreneur program, and this isn't a big part of what their organizations do. And so it took some time for them to get up and running. And some of these organizations may only have one staff, one and a half staff that are able to process these things. Furthermore, they have loan committees that generally this all goes through. And so there's processing, there's a variety of things that they would be working through. So as I mentioned earlier, some organizations took some time to get up and running. They have now begun to, they've got their process down. They've now begun to activate these loans. And so that would be the primary reason. We're going on, I think it's 3 weeks now since we launched the program. And so, with organizations that maybe haven't deployed their capital as of yet, we have talked to them all. We have tried to work with them all in hopes that they could get these loans out as quickly as possible. And if they can't, then we need to think about other organizations that could serve essentially their population, their geography with that money in order to get this out as quickly as possible.
Representative Zhang, follow-up?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, to the Deputy Commissioner again. So I guess I'm trying to find out, are you guys offering any sort of support services to help these nonprofit organizations be able to function, and how did you, I guess I'm more interested in also how were these organizations identified to provide these services?
Mr. McKinnon.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and members, the organizations were identified as most of them are existing lending partners through the Emerging Entrepreneur Program. So most of these organizations have been receiving money from us through legislative appropriations from you for at least the last decade, and some a lot longer. And so a lot of these are fairly sophisticated lenders. Some of those are relatively new to the program. And yes, we have worked with a lot of these lenders over the years, particularly the new ones, in helping them set up loan committees, what are the documents that they need, those types of things. and tried to offer. We've got a couple staff that have worked with all of these organizations for a long time, and tried to offer guidance and assistance in putting these in getting these loans out the door. And so, as you can imagine, we've tried to work very quickly, and our primary concern is to get this money out and get it out, obviously, as quickly as possible. And so, many lenders have done, a variety of things. The Latino Economic Development Corporation has the application and the instructions and everything in Spanish on their website. I know there's multiple organizations that that speak a variety or many different languages, like NDC. I think they have 10 or 11 different languages spoken at their organization. So there's a variety of capacity at these lenders to serve the ultimate borrower.
Mr. McKinnon, in the because we only have an hour and a half, I'm going to skip my question, but I will say this to end your time in the hot seat, so to speak, that maybe you need to be more forthcoming with these lenders about what it's going to entail and get them to get this money out quickly. There's so many businesses that each and every one of our committee members are getting calls from, that this money can't just sit. It needs to get out into the, to our business, our small businesses. It certainly seems that the large businesses with their good lawyers and great lobbyists have been taken care of, but those with 20 employees or less, have been burning up our phone lines and filling our email boxes with pleas. They're not angry, they're just frustrated and in need of help. So I'll leave it to you to take this back to your office and to the people with a higher pay grade to really push these organizations when this bill passes, the bill that we're gonna take up today passes, to get that money out ASAP with the proper proper paperwork, so that we in June or next January, when we go over how successful we were, we won't have any blemishes on our record. So with that, Mr. McKinnon, thank you for your time here. I hope you'll stick around or stay at least on the line if there's questions at the end on House File 1507. So thank you. Members, we're going to go to House File 1507. Again, my computer has been down for 3 days. I'm not sure what I have or don't have here. I spent all last night trying, my wife spent all last night, the techie in the household, with my holding the tools for her, worked on trying to fix it. We finally got it working last night. So I don't think there's anything else on the agenda. Mr. Molnar, is there anything else on the agenda other than 1507?
1507 is the only thing we have left, Mr. Chair.
Thank you again. So Representative Stevenson, would you care to move your bill? Or wait a second, that is already in our possession. Do you have to, Mr. Molnar, does he have to move it again?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The motion will be to send to Ways and Means.
Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, I would move that House File 1507 be referred to Ways and Means.
Thank you. I see you have a delete all amendment. Would you care to move your amendment and explain it? And then we'll have your testifiers, questions and answers, and then we'll vote on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would you like me to, I'll move my amendment. I don't know if you want the committee to adopt the amendment before my remarks. The amendment I would move is the DE2. It gets the bill in the shape I'd like the committee to consider it.
Thank you, Representative Stevenson. All in favor of the DE2 as House file, I'm sorry, I have to think this one through. The DE2 amendment has been offered. All in favor to get the bill in the shape that the author would like, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Okay, do we have to do aye? I did not hear, are there any nays? Are there any nays? Hearing none, I'm going to ask the author to explain House File 1507 as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. The COVID-19 pandemic is causing unprecedented devastation to our economy. More than 500,000 Minnesotans have filed for unemployment since the crisis began. The scale of the efforts to provide relief from the state and federal governments have also been unprecedented. Most notably, the federal government has made billions of dollars available to businesses through the PPP program. As has been widely reported in the media, however, these federal funds were largely eaten up by the well-connected and the well-resourced, leaving little relief for the small businesses that are struggling across Minnesota. Ruth Chris Steakhouse, the high-end restaurant chain, received $20 million. Tidal Boxing Club of Coon Rapids, owned by a couple who live in Champlin, spent hours filling out complex applications and received nothing. The bill we are now, that we're considering today is our effort to help those who can't afford a Washington lobbyist and don't have huge accounting and legal departments. Our bill devotes $55 million in partially to fully forgivable loans to Minnesota small businesses. $11 million of the funds will be reserved for the smallest small businesses with 6 employees or less. An additional $8 million is set aside for businesses between 7 and 20 employees. A further $10 million goes to help minority-owned businesses, including the small family businesses that operate in the cultural shopping centers that dot our state from Wilmer to St. Cloud to Midtown in Minneapolis. These businesses are so small, they may not even have a bank account, let alone a lobbyist. We know that diverse and immigrant communities are often hit first and hardest in economic hard times, and they are often left out of relief efforts. And so this provision of the bill is very important. Unlike the federal government, the state of Minnesota cannot deficit spend. And so the amounts we propose today are modest and certainly not enough to meet the needs of every small business who is struggling in Minnesota. But we can do the best that we can with the resources we've got. Whether a small business survives the pandemic should not depend on whether they're able to play the influence game or Washington politics. A small two-person family business here in Minnesota deserves a chance to make it to the other side of COVID-19 just as much as the huge, well-connected businesses that emptied the PPP bank account. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'm happy to take questions.
Do you have any testifiers?
Mr. Chair, I think a number of people have signed up to testify, yes.
Would you care to take questions first or testify to the have testifiers come up and speak to the bill?
I defer to the chair, whatever you would prefer.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Stevenson. Why don't we ask the testifiers and Mr. Mulner, why don't you, you have a list, I'm sure. Can you tell me who is first on your list?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have Mike Tamale and Renee Dosman from NDC up next, first, and Henry Jimenez, second.
Thank you. Mr. Tamale, would you please give us your testimony?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We're going to have Renee Dosman, our Executive Director of Twin Cities NDC, begin our testimony.
Thank you. And again, we have about 45 minutes left, so understand that this is a committee that likes to ask questions. So please start, please identify yourself for the tape and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is Renee Dosman with the Neighborhood Development Center, and we will be brief. Thank you for this opportunity to testify, and thank you all for working so hard on this bill 1507. NDC has a handout with a snapshot of our results and our suggestions for additional supports for micro and small businesses, but here's a quick summary of that. NDC has worked with over 5,000 inner city micro and small businesses over the past 30 years. We do extensive training, lending, technical assistance, and we have incubators, such as the Midtown Global Market and Mercado Central. Want to thank the Deputy Commissioner McKinnon. With the allocations that we received from DEED for the SBEL loans, NDC has put out nearly $1.4 million. Over 75% of that amount, 75% are entrepreneurs of color. In addition, over half of them were micro businesses with fewer than 5 full-time employees. And just as Mr. McKinnon mentioned, we do definitely have a waiting list. And now I'll turn it over to Mr. Tamale. Thank you.
Thank you, Renee, and thank you, Mr. Chair. So first of all, we wanted to commend both the legislature
could you,
and
could you please identify, Mr. Tamale, could you please identify yourself for the tape?
I'm sorry. This is Mike Tamale, Neighbor Development Center.
Thank you.
Thank you. First, we wanted to commend both the legislature and DEED for amazing work. This amount of money that's gone out has gone out in 3 weeks, as Mr. McKinnon said, and it was much more like emergency management deployment rather than traditional lending that any of our organizations do and that any of our entrepreneurs are used to. So it's been an incredible rebuilding of our machinery and of our retraining of our staff. Looking forward now, the challenge is how to better reach micro and small businesses in underserved communities and entrepreneurs of color. The barriers that were experienced in the first round of this funding, which was basically set up as a first come, first serve with no upper limit on business size, included the small entrepreneurs learning too late about the program, struggling with extensive technology problems to complete the applications, very limited backroom capacity and financial data often, in many cases a significant language barrier, and for Islamic borrowers, the prohibition on interest. Our suggestions going forward, as are in that handout, number one is to deploy these funds through trusted and proven organizations and networks like Neighbor Development Center, Latino Economic Development Center, and many other community partners and connectors. And furthermore, carve out funds like this bill does. So we support House File 1507, especially the carve outs for the micro and small businesses, the 12-month deferral, the forgiveness provision, which obviously will make it even more attractive to all the folks that are dying on the vine right now, and then the support for the ethnic public markets. Our Midtown Global Market, for instance, has lost and is projected to lose at least $300,000 in rent revenues in the first 2.5 months of this pandemic shutdown. And we desperately need some support to keep that that market open and those 45 businesses open. We do recommend increasing the 10% administrative fee up to 15% for the groups that are working with these very small businesses, because it takes quite a bit more hand-holding. But back to the question of the speed of deployment, as Mr. McKinnon said, it took us a couple of weeks, frankly, to really rebuild our whole process and way of doing things and how we train our folks. But we're well underway now, and I guarantee you the next round will be deployed faster by every organization involved. So thank you very much for this opportunity, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Tamale. I'm going to actually call down the next testifier, Mr. Jimenez, and then if there's a burning question, we certainly can have that answered. But I'm trying to keep this to give people a little time to talk about, do the amendments, and then talk about the bill itself. So, Mr. Jimenez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Henry Jimenez, Executive Director of El Centro para el Desarrollo Económico Latino, also known as the Latino Economic Development Center, or simply LEDC. I'm here to testify in support of House File 1507. While $50 million may seem like a lot to a lot of people, I can tell you that we're going to need a lot more than that. And I guarantee that a lot of the folks receiving these funds will be able to provide success stories to you in the short end. Since 2003, LEDC has helped hundreds of Latino and immigrant entrepreneurs and small businesses start up or expand their businesses. These are the smallest businesses that are often overlooked by traditional financial institutions. We are the closest support system for big dreams outworking themselves into successful realities. We do this through technical assistance support in Spanish or English. Since the pandemic, we have evolved to meet the new needs of our clients and find sustainable growth. LEDC has the capabilities of providing new support and services for our clients and for our clients yet to come. I would like to share my screen so you could see just a snapshot of some of the work we've had to do in response to the pandemic. Sorry. I apologize for this. It's you should have received this, so I'm going to read it off to you. In emergency loans, we've supported our clients with the Small Business Administrative Programs as much as we can. But from the beginning, we felt that the best place for us to spend our time was in the Minnesota Deed Small Business Emergency Loan Program. By next week, we will have processed the entire $1 million that was allocated to us to process and have served probably over 30 clients with that money. Once applications was approved by Deed and funds secure, we are able to get funds into our clients' accounts within 2 to 3 days. There was other municipal emergency funds, and we've assisted over 200 clients with information, answering questions, or submit applications. We've also helped our clients defer loan payments if they have any type of loans with us. We were also awarded a $200,000 grant with the Minnesota Council on Foundations. And again, by next week, approximately 90 grantees across the state will receive that from us. In technical assistance, we provided about 400 hours. And I want to remind our team is a lot smaller than some of the other CDFIs, but we still provided 400 hours in March and anticipate providing 700 hours in April. I could keep telling you more about what we've done, but I could tell you that everybody on my team has worked more than their 40 hours. They're working every day. And for that, I also want to thank Deed, because I can tell you that folks like Deputy Commissioner McKinnon, Drew, and Bob Isaacson, I see emails from them coming at 10 p.m. on a Sunday night. I think everybody's all hands on deck, and I just want to make sure that they're also recognized for that. Keeping our community small businesses solvent is not only good business, it's also about saving our culture. Can you imagine having to wait a generation before being able to have a taco from La Hacienda, a huarachazo from Los Ocampos, a pupusa from El Guanaco, a paleta from La Michoacana, or a beer from La Doña? Many of our community members have, and many of you have waited a lifetime to have finally have some delicious food here in Minnesota. On behalf of our Latino and other immigrant businesses, you are welcome. Many of the establishments I have mentioned have gotten their start at Mercado Central and like Midtown Global Market, just like Mark Tamalet mentioned, and would have a positive impact from the support provided in paragraph F of this bill by providing loans to such operators of permanent indoor retail spaces that have strong ethnic cultural orientation. This is how you save community businesses, but most importantly, this is how you save our culture, our Minnesota culture. Our mission has not changed, but our type of work has during the pandemic. We are not focused on starting new businesses right now. We are now doing all we can to support all of these businesses I just mentioned and others stay solvent. By now, you have all heard from your constituents that many in your district didn't get some of this federal funding, like EIDL or PPP. The provision stated in this bill in paragraph D ensures that our small mom and pop businesses have the chance to access these funds. a chance to access an investment with measurable returns from the state of Minnesota into their businesses. Investment of funds early in the is essential because it gives businesses a fighting chance to stay open, which allows them to find certain ways to repurpose their service and products and to serve our community needs in a safe way. These businesses have revitalized our commercial corridors in the Twin Cities and in greater Minnesota. They have become a part of our community, and most importantly, it is a part of our culture as Minnesotanos, which is Spanish for Minnesotans. We believe in our clients on day one and will continue to believe in them today and tomorrow. I want to thank you for believing in Latino and immigrant small businesses. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Invite you all, although Mr. Jimenez is speaking to the great south of the border food on that he's worked with, restaurants, I'm going to invite any and all to join me next year while you're in session and I'm not, to go have lunch on the East 7th Street strip of Jay Zong's district and have some of the best food in the Twin Cities. Yeah, having said that, are there any questions for Mr. Jimenez? I guess this committee is not going to ask questions. So we're going to move on to the amendments. I want to thank both of the, all three of the testifiers, and again, move on to the amendments. I have Representative Robbins. You have the A4 amendment.
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. I would like to move the A4 amendment.
The A4 amendment has been moved. Would you care to explain it?
Yes, I will keep it brief. I appreciate everyone's hard work on this issue. I know we all care about supporting the smallest businesses in our districts that have not had the ability to access some of these loans and federal programs. And so that's what my amendment also focuses on. I've been working on this for several weeks since the very first day of the shutdown. Maybe it was the second day. I received a call from a woman in my district who is watching. Shout out to Mandy, who brought this to me and talked immediately about the struggle she was having and how she was going to retool her business. And she has done incredible work to change from a cafe to a curbside pickup of different items families can pick up to do at home with their kids, craft kits and sensory bins. Now she's doing t-shirts. There's no end to her innovation, but these other loans have not worked for her. So in response to Mandy and many other people I've heard from in my district, salon stylists and people who do nails and the very smallest businesses, these are the ones that we are all trying to help. And so my proposal is slightly different than the underlying bill, and I would provide in the first section an additional $20 million for the Small Business Emergency Loan Program and open it up to all types of businesses. Right now, as Deputy Commissioner McKinnon referenced, it's specific to businesses affected by the EOs, but honestly, there are a lot of other businesses that also have been impacted by the COVID crisis that need this help. You know, in my district, there's a lot of very small precision manufacturing that didn't qualify as critical sector or other small delivery services or businesses like that. And so we just need to open it up, I think, to all businesses who can prove and under the language they have to show that their need is COVID related. But I think that will help preserve Main Street in our small communities. And then secondly, the second section is $10 million for a micro business loan program. And again, the numbers are a little different than the underlying loan program of the bill, but it's similar. We will use $10 million, $5 million goes to Greater Minnesota, $5 million stays in the metro. Of that $5 million in each region, $1 million is specifically set aside for businesses with 0 to 5 employees. And so we're also really targeting those very small businesses that really have not wanted to, even if they could qualify for the PPP, which some of them have and did, they cannot afford another loan payment. I have businesses calling me every day where they say, we already have two SBA loans. I already used my every ounce of savings in my 401k. Like, I cannot afford another loan payment. So even at 50% forgivable, the way the current deed program is structured, that is a bridge too far for some of these very small businesses that we may lose if we don't provide them a 100% forgivable loan, which is what my program does. So I appreciate your consideration, and I have a couple witnesses, Mr. Chairman, or testifiers, sorry.
Please, please bring them down. Or I don't have their names, so if you wish
certainly.
To introduce.
Yes, certainly. So first, I'd like to introduce former Congressman Tim Penny, who is the president of the Southern Minnesota Initiative Foundation. In my bill, I designate that the money given to Greater Minnesota would be handled through the MIPS, and Tim can speak to that directly of why they are so far capable and ready and able to get this done. And I think it speaks to some of the other issues we've heard about today. Well-meaning groups that don't have the experience cannot get the money out the door. And we've already been in this soup for 4 weeks, and we need to get the help out there immediately. So, Tim, please join us.
Thank you,
Mr. Penny.
Robbins. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Tim Penny, the president of the Southern Minnesota Initiative Foundation. We are one of six rural foundations that serve collectively the 80 non-metro counties in Minnesota. Our foundations have been around for 30 years. So we came into existence during the farm crisis of the 1980s. Most of you on this Zoom today are too young to remember those times, but the very difficult times in all of rural America. And our foundations were created in order to invest in community and economic development for the future of our respective regions. As such, we've been working with small towns and supporting entrepreneurs in a variety of ways over the 30 years that we've been in existence. Most recently, we have been among the emerging entrepreneur lenders for rural Minnesota, and we are all currently working with dollars appropriated for the emerging entrepreneur program. In our case, I think we now have virtually all of the 50 or so loans that our region is eligible for in the hands of deed, and some of those loans are already out the door. We have all done disaster assistance grants to businesses in our region when we have been faced with emergency situations in the past, flooding in the Root River Valley, fires in downtown Medelia, other serious disasters. So the bottom line is the six initiative foundations have extensive grant-making experience. We have extensive small business lending experience, and we also have been involved with disaster recovery in our respective regions. So going forward, we can clearly manage quickly and effectively any dollars sent our way and get those dollars out the door to these smallest of businesses in our respective regions. And as an example, in just 2 weeks' time, we collectively distributed 1,600 grants to early childhood providers across rural Minnesota, and that totaled about $1.4 million that we were able to get out the door in that short period of time. So again, we have the capacity to work in this space, and appreciate the opportunity to testify this morning.
And why don't we have your second testifier, and then if there's questions, we can keep people on the line.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to have Elaine Rasmussen from Social Impact Now join us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Rasmussen, please identify yourself for the tape and proceed.
Thank you, Chairman, and thank you, Representative Robbins. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and the members. My name is Elaine Rasmussen, and thank you again. I want to echo the comments of my colleagues. Thank you for all the work that DEED is doing, as well as all of you, and wrapping your hands around this. As I said, my name is Elaine Rasmussen. I'm a St. Paul resident. I am one of those folks in the exurbs or suburbs. I'm the founder and CEO of Social Impact Strategies Group, which is also located in St. Paul. We provide consulting on inclusive economic development and social social impact, as well as small business advising. And like my colleagues, our team has been working 80, 90 hours a week each on helping small businesses over the last several weeks. I'm also the producer of the annual conference called Connect Up, which brings together underestimated entrepreneurs, local investors, and the entrepreneur ecosystem. I'm here to share my experience and recommendations on these emergency funds as a Black Native female small business owner, a futurist, a member of local and national entrepreneur ecosystem communities of practice, as well as a small business technical assistance provider. It is very exciting that our state government is looking at for ways to close the much needed gap in supporting small businesses across the state. However, there are growing concerns and grave lessons to be learned from the federal programs, which my colleagues have talked about, that have left Black and Brown, Indigenous, and rural small businesses out in the cold. I know this because I, like many of the entrepreneurs we serve, have had little luck accessing the over $300 billion of funding. Here are just a few snapshots of my experience. It took me over 7 hours to collect and upload my documents for the initial EIDL loan application. The EIDL program was revamped, and everyone who applied before March 30th had to reapply, which took another 5 to 8 hours. I applied for the PPP program through my bank. While the application is only 2 pages, I needed to collect a completely different set of documents than what I submitted for the EIDL program, which took an additional hours to download, scan, and upload to the bank system. I could not reach anyone at my bank to confirm my application was received, and to date, which has now been about 2.5 weeks, I still have not received any information or heard back from my banker. I applied for the PPP program through another financial institution, and that took another 8 hours to complete, not only for adding another set of documents that I didn't have before, but the system continuously crashing and an inability to upload documents and other technical complications. I finally applied for the U.S. Chamber funding and spent literally over 8 hours on the site hitting refresh because the site kept crashing multiple times throughout the day, and I could get nothing else done to work on my business and never actually got an opportunity to complete my registration on the site. Just to give you some deeper context, English is my first language. I have a master's degree and finance background. I have a CPA, I have a digital accounting system, I have 4 additional staff who can actually keep the business going, I have high-speed internet, I have a banker at a large bank, and I'm very plugged into the ecosystem and have great relationships across the state. I have many advantages and still have not received any relief funding, and I am no exception. Luck and hope should not be the plan to access these funds. With that being said, we urge you to take the following considerations for this and any future small business support. Create funds, create different levels of access points for funding. Different business sizes need different things. And as we've already heard, some of these businesses that have less than 6 employees need to be prioritized. If funding is passed, open the application process. Do not use a first come, first serve basis. Longer lead times so that people can submit their documents and then closing a portal is a much better way of giving these entrepreneurs an opportunity to submit their documentation in a more equitable way. I ask you to look beyond the next few months and this moment. One of the things that I hope that you take this as an opportunity is to set aside funds for infrastructure support of the entrepreneur ecosystem. As we heard from our colleagues, we don't have enough ecosystem partners to be able to process this work, not only during COVID, but in regular times. We just have an overload of need, and we need more folks like NDC, Social Impact Strategies Group, Black Women's Wealth Alliance to help with not only this crisis, but future crises. This will not be a one-time event. Currently, most of the funding is centered on startups versus early stage and second stage businesses who have been the most hit hardest by COVID. Finally, contract with service providers like Black Women's Wealth Alliance to provide some of the technical assistance to help these entrepreneurs to get their back office in place so they can weather the next crisis. And just more greater flexibility with the DEED program because a lot of, as we heard, caterers were left out of these programs. Thank you once again for your time and consideration. Social Impact Strategies Group is happy to be of service and be a resource for you at this point and any time in the future. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Ms. Rasmussen. Are there any questions for either of the witnesses? Representative Knorr? Um, I hope I'm not muted. I hope people can hear me.
Actually, I unmuted myself. So, Mr. Chair, it's a quick question. The question that I have.
Please go ahead.
For Representative Robinson, the question that I have is this: the bill that we have in front of us provides more resources. It's not 100% quick forgivable loan. And will that be something that you're willing to accept, but also making a quick change that every business that have been impacted by COVID-19, whether directly or indirectly, to be included? Is that an amendment that you're able to accept so that we can put this bill in a shape that will work for everyone?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Representative Robbins.
I'm trying, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Knorr. So I'm not quite sure I understand the question, because the language in my amendment does say any business is allowed to receive these loans as long as they can show an impact that they need it for reasons they were impacted by COVID, so not that they were tied to the executive order. So I do believe my language accomplishes what you are asking for.
Representative
Knorr. Mr. Chair, yes, it does to some extent, but the resources that is being allowed through this bill, the original DE provides more resources. And in fact, it provides a carve out to small businesses that are owned by minority business that we know have been left out through the federal program, have been left out from some of the state program, people who are unable to speak English, who don't have access to computers. And I think this is a good bill, if you look in different ways, supporting the ethnic markets. My suggestion will be that we adopt the DE bill that we already have and move on with that. That's my suggestion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Knorr. If I can just respond.
Quickly, because we're down to 20 minutes and three more amendments.
Sorry. Yes. So I understand, Representative Knorr, and I had an extensive conversation. So the language I'm carrying is the language that passed the Senate Commerce Committee earlier this week, or the Senate Jobs Committee, and now it's going to the Senate Finance Committee. And in working with the senators on their language, because I had the underlying bill over there as well, I had extensive conversations with Senator Herr, and he had, with a conversation with me, agreed that the language of just focusing on 0 to 5 entrepreneur FTEs would accomplish the same goals of reaching minority entrepreneurs. And so he was comfortable with that. And this language passed the Senate Jobs Committee unanimously with bipartisan support from all the minority members of the committee. So my plea to our committee is to take the DE amendment I'm offering, because it has bipartisan support, and then we don't have to go to a conference committee and tie this up further. Because if we could move this in the House, move it in the Senate, and then just get it over to the governor, we could be done with this, you know, maybe possibly as early as next week. But if we have to go to a conference committee and then go back to the House and Senate floor, we're looking at a couple weeks if we're lucky, and then it'll take longer to get the money out. So my plea to the committee is to move this quickly and address the other issues that are coming in the future amendments separately, because our businesses cannot wait. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'm gonna go to Representative Stevenson and ask for comments on this amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would oppose the amendment. Certainly thank Representative Robbins for her work on this. We had a great conversation a while back about this, and we absolutely share the same goal of trying to get to the businesses that have been left out of the federal relief program so far. I want to make a couple brief comments. First, I think this gets to kind of what Representative Knorr was saying. I think one idea that's in Representative Robbins' bill and that Representative Knorr raised with me yesterday was opening up the small business program to a larger amount of businesses than just those affected by the executive order. It was my intent to get that language into the DE, and I failed to do so. So I take responsibility for that, but I want to say to the committee, to Representative Robbins, that we will remedy that before the next committee stop. I would like to do that, and I think that's a point that we all have in common. I also just want to quickly address a couple points that Representative Robbins brought up in criticizing the DE, which is that small businesses can't take another loan payment. And just want to point out to her that under this program, loan payments are deferred for 12 months, and then for the smallest of the small, 100% forgivable, and for the next category, 75% forgivable. There's advantages to going with the loan program over a grant program in a lot of different ways. For one thing, I think we have a much larger pool of entities that can process the loan payment under the DE than what Representative Robbins proposed. She proposes one organization in the metro area to handle the grant program. That's 65% of all businesses in the state. And so I think that's not as good as the loan program, which will have a lot more entities involved. I also think that there's some questions about what happens in that bill under her provision, what kind of monitoring is going to take place to make sure the money is used for the lawful purposes. What happens if an entity declares bankruptcy? What happens if they've already received some forgivable money from the feds? So there's a lot of questions with Representative Robbins' proposal versus a program that the DE is proposing that we know is working pretty well, and we want to modify to focus in on the people that most need it. The last thing I want to point out, and this kind of gets to the points that Ms. Rasmussen and and Representative Norm made, among others, which is that it's very important that we specifically target our minority-owned businesses for relief. And I don't think it's sufficient to just say businesses that are 0 to 5. I think we need, which of course, the DE does have a 0 to 6 category, which is basically the same pool. But I think we need to specifically set aside some of this money for minority-owned businesses, given the track record of being able to reach out to those businesses having been not so good across the board. You know, DEED has actually done a pretty good job in the existing program, but you know, historically and across the board, they are hit hardest and have the difficulty getting relief. So, you know, this amendment that Representative Robbins proposes would eliminate that provision, setting aside money specifically for minority-owned businesses, and I would oppose that. So I would ask for no vote on this amendment.
I will add these comments and then we will vote. This bill, the delete all, this amendment does not carry enough money. The original DE, Representative Stevenson, does not have enough money in it. The federal system has failed our small businesses, and this bill should be at least twice the size that it is today to really make an impact. But I know the realization of our budget situation right now. Having said that, the clerk will take the roll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Mahoney.
No.
Representative Neuer.
No.
Representative Gunther. Representative Backer. Representative Baker. Representative Claflin. Representative Dabney.
No.
Representative Eklund. Representative Haley.
Yes.
Representative Hassan.
No.
Representative Cagle.
No.
Representative Kosnick.
Yes.
Representative Mecklen.
Yes.
Representative Moran.
No.
Representative Robbins.
Yes.
Representative Sundin. Representative Stevenson.
No.
Representative Zhang.
No.
Representative Gunther. Representative Backer. Representative Baker. Representative Eklund. Representative Sundin.
That's a no.
And if I could just ask all the members at this time to please make sure you're unmuted for these roll calls. It's good enough to see you, but we do have to hear you for the voice record as well. At this time, that is 1, 2, 3.
Will the clerk please announce the roll call when you have totaled them up rather than try to get it to me?
Mr. Chair, 10 no's. And 5 ayes.
Could the clerk please announce the roll call? I think I missed the nays.
Representative Mahoney? No. Representative Noor? No.
No.
To the legislative assistant, all you need to do is announce the numbers. I did not hear the numbers at this point.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. That is 10 no's and 5 ayes at this time.
The A4 amendment does not pass. We have the A5, but before we go to that, I'm going to tell people it's about 10:20. We have three other amendments to do. We're gonna pass this bill today, so we're gonna go until we're done. Representative Dabney, the A5 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the A5 amendment to be before the committee.
All those in favor say aye. No, wait. Nope. Representative Dabney, you might want to go over your amendment.
Certainly, Mr. Chair. Thank you, and I'll be brief. Members, in statute, we have a prohibition of finance state-chartered financial institutions, banks or credit unions, from opening bank accounts for certain individuals. The A5 amendment simply removes that prohibition, leaving the decision as to whether to open a bank account for these individuals up to that local financial institution who can assess them and their willingness to work with these people. We see that the last round of Federal CARES Act stimulus funding is going first to people who have used direct deposit for their tax returns. Folks who are unbanked, the individuals targeted in this section of statute, are at the margins of our financial society. These are the folks who most need that stimulus check to be able to make ends meet. We should, this simply allows local financial institutions to be the ones to decide whether to open an account for an individual or not. With that, Mr. Chair, I stand for questions. Thank you.
Representative Eklund, you have a question?
I'll pass, Mr. Chair.
Are there any other questions?
Mr. Chair?
Any other questions? Yes, sir. I can't recognize by the voice, so please proceed.
I'm sorry.
Identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, Representative Kosnick, I was trying to email the C8, but thank you for recognizing me. Just a kind of a question to the amendment author. We're trying to provide some assistance to businesses to continue to operate their business. Certainly, there's a lot of high risk in all businesses right now, and we understand that a high percentage or a higher percentage of businesses will fail than normally. and we've got this amendment. How does a business that doesn't even have a checking account, how do we expect them to survive throughout this process, and what is that likelihood? Because it seems a little kind of counterintuitive that if you don't have a checking account or the people don't have a checking account, that they're going to operate a bona fide business, and it's concerning to me.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Dabney.
Mr. Chair, I think the question is whether we as the state legislature can best assess these individuals and their bankworthiness, or whether banks and credit unions can better assess these individuals for their bankworthiness. I'm going to leave it up to the financial institutions to make the decision.
Representative Kosnick, do you have another question?
No, I just appreciate the comments. Thank you.
Are there any other questions? Seeing none, all those, will the clerk please take the roll?
And just before we do this, I'm going to ask that you are all muted for this, and please make sure you unmute once you hear your name. If you are present, I will unmute a second time, and we will get back to you, okay? Representative Mahoney.
Aye.
Representative Neuer.
Aye.
Representative Gunther. Representative Gunther, I just muted you. Representative Backer.
Gunther, aye.
Representative Baker. Representative Claflin.
No,
Was that an aye, Representative?
Aye.
Representative Dabney.
Aye.
Representative Eklund.
Aye.
Representative Haley.
No.
Representative Hassan.
Aye.
Representative Cagle.
Aye.
Representative Kosnick.
No.
Representative Mecklen.
No.
Representative Moran. Representative Robbins.
Aye.
Representative Sundin.
Aye.
Representative Stevenson.
Aye.
Representative Zhang.
Aye.
Representative Backer. Representative Baker. Mr. Chair, with 13 ayes and 3 noes.
Thank you. By a vote of 15-3, the A5 is added to the bill. Representative Dabney, you have the A6 amendment.
Yes, I'd like to move the A6 amendment to be before the committee, Mr. Chair. The A6 amendment.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The A6 amendment deals with the payday lending industry here in Minnesota. This is a time where we're talking about the needs of small businesses, but the number one need that small businesses have is customers. The payday lending industry removes $150 million a year in interest in excessive interest in fees from individuals and communities, $150 million a year that instead could go to buying a burger to go at the local restaurant, a pair of shoes at the local store, a new wrench at the or a gallon of paint at the local hardware store. At a time of economic stress like this, we need to look out for working Minnesotans. And the A6 amendment simply changes the payback period of a payday loan, allowing the borrower 12 equal payments in which to pay back the loan. Remember, these loans carry excessive interest rates. So the A6 is clear that the loan rates, interest rate, and fees are calculated, and then the borrower is allowed up to 12 months to pay that off. That prohibits some of the common negative cascading effect of payday loans, things like because the payday lender has first right to money in the borrower's account, it provokes things like delinquency on other bills, bank late fees, penalty fees, and account foreclosure for the borrower. Allowing people 12 months to pay back the loan simply smooths out the process, keeps money in the borrower's pocket, keeps money in the local business community as they're able to go out and spend in these challenging times. With that, Mr. Chair, I'd stand ready for questions and ask for our members' support.
Representative Kosnick, you have a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members, and Representative Dabney. One point on the previous amendment, I think that was goes into some federal regulation, so that was just want to point that out for the record of some reason why that probably shouldn't be included in this bill, but I recognize it passed. I was wondering if the representative amendment author would comment. We've heard testimony here today that the administrative fees on the overall loans that we're dealing with in this bill are running about 10%, and the administrators are suggesting that that's really not even covering some of their cost, requesting to have it be considered as high as 15%, which is typically a little bit higher. I think I understand the reason for that request, because the loan sizes are smaller, and that's very similar to what our payday lenders provide, that convenience for people. And so members, I would, based on the testimony we heard previously, and I think I would oppose this amendment. I don't think it's helpful.
Mr. Chair?
No, Representative Abbey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kosnick, you explain, you show the contrast quite clearly. You comment about a difference between a 10% fee and a 15%, but keep in mind that on a $100 payday loan, the interest and fees are over 300%. And these are on very safe loans that get paid back in the 96, 97, 98% area. So they're very low risk for the lender, very high expense, exorbitant expense for the borrower. Allowing the borrower more time to pay back that loan keeps more money in our local communities that is valuable to the borrower. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Are there any other questions? Are there any other questions?
Representative Haley.
Representative Haley, please proceed.
Thank you, Chair. And Representative Dabney, my concern about your amendment is that when I read it, it seems like a commerce provision to me, and it would require this bill then to go through the Commerce Committee and would delay the ultimate goal of moving this bill forward and getting money to small business owners.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Haley, thank you for raising that. I have spoken to Chair Halverson of Commerce. She's accepting of this amendment and the previous amendment and does not see a need for this bill to go to the Commerce Committee. You'll recall that in the construction of the Jobs Omnibus Bill, commonly the commerce policy provisions such as these are folded into the Jobs Bill as it moves to the floor. So this would be the place those provisions would end up regardless.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. And Representative Haley, I have also spoken to Representative Halverson, and she has said she does not, as Representative Dabney has indicated, she's comfortable with this moving through the Jobs Committee at the present time. So unless there's another question, hearing none, the clerk will take the roll.
Representative Mahoney.
Aye.
Representative Moore.
Aye.
Representative Gunther.
Aye.
Representative Back. Representative Baker. Representative Claflin.
Yes.
Representative Dabney.
Aye.
Representative Eklund.
Aye.
Representative Haley.
No.
Representative Hassan.
Aye.
Representative Cable.
Aye.
Representative Cosmic.
Cosmic, nay.
Representative Mecklen.
Nay.
Representative Moran.
Aye.
Representative Robbins.
No.
Representative Sundin.
Aye.
Representative Stevenson.
Aye.
Representative Zhang.
Aye.
Representative Backer. Representative Baker.
Please announce the totals when you have them.
Mr. Chair, I have 12 ayes and 4 noes.
The A6 amendment has been adopted. The A7, Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to save the committee time, I'm not gonna, I'll end up withdrawing this for the sake of time, but I'm kind of dismayed a little bit at the process, the way the bill was posted real quickly. I'm not sure that there was a lot of collaboration with the minority in putting this necessarily together to, in the unique circumstances. The process today with kind of running out of time is a little bit difficult, but we're all operating under new challenges, so I accept that, but I'm wondering, I don't think it makes sense to take half of the $10 million that was appropriated for the Small Business Loan Guarantee Program and just add another $5 million to $80 million for the Small Business Emergency Loan Program, and that's essentially what the amendment speaks to. It's a challenge for businesses that if they are able to get one of
You cut out there, Representative Kosnick.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Kosnick. The A7 is withdrawn. We are back on the House File 1507 as amended. Are there questions for the author or any of the testifiers so far?
Mr. Chair, any questions?
Representative Kosnick.
Thank you. To the author, Parts of the loan in the minority-owned business area, the target, there was no loan caps in there. It's something that's
again, you cut out. Representative Stevenson, did you get the question?
I think the question is about why there's no loan cap in the section dealing with minority-owned businesses. And the answer to that question is that we are trying to help a wide variety of entities there, ranging from very small businesses that are, typical small businesses, trying to assist the incubator markets that we had a lot of discussion about, like the Midtown Mobile Market or Hmongtown in St. Paul, and those would require larger loans. And so there needs to be more flexibility for DEED in administrating that portion of the program. I hope that gets to the next question.
Representative Stevenson, I want you to remember that these are not, you mentioned two metro incubators. There are these type of incubators across the state, from St. Cloud and the Northland down to the Iowa border. So this is open to all such businesses. And I want that to be very clear on the record that any of these incubators can apply. It will be up to whoever has the money is sent to from DEED to make determinations on that. Are there any other questions? Are there any other questions?
Mr. Chair, I'm back. I got pumped out.
go. Representative Kosnick.
Usually it works, and I'm starting to become a fan of broadband, even in Lakeville. just a couple points. Sorry about the connection here this morning. I didn't hear the answer from the author about the loan caps, but I think I made the point. I think it's appropriate perhaps to have some targeting in minority-owned businesses, but I think it needs to be tightened up. I appreciate Representative Robbins' attempt to expand it to more business sectors as we're talking about businesses. I think it would be appropriate to have the discussion to the author, if you're willing to do this. Have the discussion to permit business organizations like our chambers that are providing so much resources and information to our struggling businesses. Specifically, I can reference our Lakeville Chamber of Commerce, but I'm sure it's being replicated across the state, that these organizations, of course, have additional overhead that we should provide, permit them to participate in some of this relief so that they can continue to provide assistance and direction to all our businesses locally of how to obtain these loans and other resources that are available, in addition to how businesses can continue to improve their operations. And that was a comment that I wanted to make. So I won't be voting for the bill now. I would also comment that the process in these challenging times should be much more collaborative. I recognize that there's not necessarily the agreement that we've had in the last couple of weeks among the four caucuses, but I think it's shown that type of collaboration permits bills to be better, well planned out, avoid long durations on the House floor, different amendments and stuff that if this bill doesn't have more cooperation, I don't know what the exact path is, Representative Stevens, but I think we'll be in for a very long, arduous floor amendments and discussions. And so if we can minimize that in advance, that would be great. I appreciate the intent of what you're doing, Representative Stevens, but I would encourage you to take some of the comments made by the minority today and as we move forward. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Kosnick. And I'm sure Representative Stevenson is open to any ideas that we can move this forward. Again, this is not a large enough package for what has happened in our state and in our nation. And the feds have too many lawyers and too many lobbyists down there. They seem to be able to get large parts of these dollars targeted towards them, whereas our small businesses, the entrepreneurs that are going to grow the Medtronics and 3Ms and others, we need to give them that leg up. So I'm happy to expand this bill as much as possible. Again, I think this bill is not large enough. Having said that, I will now turn it over to the author for any closing comments, and we will take a roll call unless there are other questions.
Mr. Chair,
I know you've
Representative Haley. Well, wait a second. I just got a text that Representative Backer has a question. So, Representative Haley, I will call on you next.
Thank you.
Yeah, I just want to let the chair, first of all, chair know and members, I've been on since initial call, so did not hear the vote for whatever technical reason. I do appreciate what the author's trying to do. It's more a quick comment. I am disappointed that Representative Robbins' amendment didn't add. I'm a small business owner. We are doing everything we can out here in Western Minnesota, and we are having our hiccups. So I know what you're trying to do. And I appreciate that. At the same time, I'm very concerned about not having Representative Robbins' amendment, because I think that really would have made this a better bill. So that was my comment, and I wanted to be on the record that I was on all those votes, but nobody could hear me. So thank you.
And Representative Backer, I understand some concerns, but I do want to point out that Representative Robbins' amendment significantly reduced the amount of money in this particular bill. And that was my biggest concern. We need to think larger to help all of these businesses. And the emergency loan package in this bill has $30 million, whereas Representative Robbins' amendment reduced that to $20 million. And that was my main concern with this particular amendment. Representative Haley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the bill author. Can you explain the process of backfilling the $50 million from the general fund when the federal funds come through? That is my main concern about your bill. Thank you.
Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Haley. So the bill first will draw upon the CARES Act money if it's available by May 15th, but I have pretty low expectations for the federal government, and we don't want to punish our small businesses for the lack of timeliness on the behalf of the federal government. And so if the money is not available from the federal government by the 15th, we will use general fund money to meet this need. And then perhaps at a later point, we can appropriate money from the CARES Act to cover that.
Representative Haley.
Yeah, I guess it's just my concern that we're not sure how that process works right now. And I want to echo Representative Kosnick's comments. I wish we had allowed more time to fully vet this bill. I think this morning's process was a little rushed, and I'm still not convinced that this bill would not be required to go through Commerce. So there's just a lot of questions on my end that are too open-ended right now for me to support it. Although I support our process here to get money to our small micro businesses, I just don't know that this is the right approach today.
Thank you. Are there any other questions? Any other questions or comments? Representative Stevenson, go right ahead. Who was that?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, it's Representative Robbins. I had my hand raised, but you may not be able to see that.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be brief. I just wanted to say to your point, sir, that this is not big enough. I agree with you, but I was trying to balance the fiscal responsibility in case the money does have to come out of the general fund with the need. And with all respect, my bill wouldn't be enough, and this bill will not be enough. And so I do hope to follow up with Deputy Commissioner McKinnon on what are the pathways we can get access to some of this federal money. I know the state is in line to get $2 billion. And so I think we as representatives just don't have a very good idea of how that's coming into the state and what it can be used for. I know much of it has been used, rightly so, for PPE and ventilators and healthcare testing needs. So we all support that. But if there's other money available, I think we all would benefit from understanding what that can be used for and how we can access that money. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Robbins. Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be very brief and just say that I appreciate all the comments today, and I do want to continue to be collaborative. As I mentioned before, I've had conversations with Representative Robbins, with Senator Pratt, with others about this, and I'm always willing and able to talk to anyone. In fact, the specific provision about opening up the loans beyond what's currently allowed under the executive order is one that I'm very interested in. Representative Knorr had some language to that effect yesterday that I wanted to be in this bill, and we will do that in the future. And in fact, if I had been quicker on my feet, maybe I would have moved to divide Representative Robbins' amendment and accept that part of it. So we'll continue to work on it. But other than that, this is a good bill. Vote for it. Please vote for it.
Members, we have before us the 1507 as amended to be passed and sent to Ways and Means. And I'm going to ask staff this. I want to make sure that that our staff, the nonpartisan staff, can make technical changes. So is that where I say this? Mr. Molnar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Now is a perfect time to say that. Thank you.
I wanted staff to know that they can make the technical changes as needed to this particular bill before it gets to Ways and Means, where I hope anyone's concerns that are related to Representative Stevenson can be addressed and added with an amendment. Having said all that, the clerk will take the roll.
Again, I will make sure you have the opportunity to unmute yourself, and if we don't hear from you, we will come back. Representative Mahoney.
Aye.
Representative Neuer.
Aye.
Representative Gunther.
Aye.
Representative Backer. Representative Backer.
Backer, no.
Representative. Representative Claflin.
Yes.
Representative Dabney.
Aye.
Representative Eklund.
Aye.
Representative Haley.
No.
Representative Hassan.
Aye.
Representative Cagle.
Aye.
Representative Kosnick.
Kosnick, no.
Representative Mecklen.
No.
Representative Moran.
Aye.
Representative Robbins.
No.
Representative Sundin.
Aye.
Representative Stevenson.
Aye.
Representative Young.
Aye.
Representative Baker. Mr. Chair, we have 12 ayes and 5 noes.
Thank you. Members, the House File 1507, as amended, has passed and sent to Ways and Means. Thank you all for coming today or getting on the committee hearing today. The only other piece of business is I want to make people aware that we're trying to get a space next week for a hearing to bring the unemployment D's unemployment department in to give us an update of what's going on and give the members an opportunity to ask questions. Is there any other business before the committee today? Is there any other business before the committee today? Seeing none. We are adjourned. Please watch your emails for any information on a UI hearing next week. Thank you all for your attention today, and we hope that we can negotiate this with the Senate and the governor's office and get it up even farther. I think our businesses in the state of Minnesota deserve that from our legislature. Thank you all.